The title of this conference is Facing Old Age, Death, and Diminishment. Father Teilhard de Chardin wrote a delightful little book called The Divine Milieu. The first part of this book deals with what he calls the divinization of our activities. By divinization, he means the sanctification, how we can bring all of our activities into the orbit of God's grace, God's love, God's will. And then in the second part, he talks about the divinization of our passivities, and particularly the passivities of diminishment. It is that second part of the divine milieu to which this conference is addressed, because in spiritual direction, this is a very necessary part of helping the directee to live at peace with oneself, with God, and with the future. The ability to face up to the greatest of all diminishments, namely death, but to all of those lesser diminishments, those passivities, those things that happen to us over which we have no control, to be able to divinize or to sanctify them, to find God's will, to find peace and even joy in accepting them. This is one of the most difficult parts of our spiritual journey. And therefore, any good spiritual director needs to know how to help the directee to face up to these passivities and these diminishments in one's life. According to Teilhard, activity forms only about half of our human existence. That at least half of our total human existence on earth has to deal with passivities, with diminishments, with the unknown. For example, everything beyond a certain distance is dark. The future is an unknown quantity. And so we have to learn how to develop our relationship with God, with neighbor, and with self through these passivities and diminishments, as well as through our activities. There are those external passivities, those hostile powers which obstruct our progress from without, the opposition that we might experience from others, the illness that attacks us from without, over which we have no control, that forces us to curtail drastically our activities. The whole question of chance, of good fortune or bad fortune, of good luck or bad luck, as it is often called. This is all a part of this diminishment and this passivity that every one of us needs to learn how to handle and to conquer. And during the second part of life, especially after the age of 50, and most especially after the age of 60, we have to face up to the diminishment of our physical energies. The fact that we do not have nearly as much energy that we took for granted, perhaps, in our younger years. But now that we are able only to do perhaps one half, one fifth, or even one tenth of what we once were capable of doing. And so facing up to old age is one that is especially important. And Father Teilhard, in his little book, talks about this communion through diminishment. And he's particularly talking about this diminishment of old age and of sickness and death. Let me read to you one of the prayers that he suggests. After having perceived you, O my God, as the one who is my greater self, grant that when my hour comes, I may recognize you under the species of each alien or hostile force that seems bent upon destroying or uprooting me. When the signs of old age begin to mark my body, and still more, when they touch my mind, when the illness that is to diminish me or carry me off strikes from without or is born within me, when the painful moment comes in which I suddenly awaken to the fact that I am ill or growing old, and above all at that last moment when I feel I am losing hold of myself and am absolutely passive within the hands of the great unknown forces that have formed me. In all those dark moments, O God, grant that I may understand that it is you, provided my faith is strong enough, you who are painfully parting the fibers of my being in order to penetrate to the very marrow of my substance and bear me away within yourself. The more deeply and incurably illness is encrusted in my flesh, the more it will be you that I am harboring, you as a loving, active principle of purification and detachment. The more the future opens before me like some dizzy abyss or dark tunnel, the more confident I may be if I venture forward on the strength of your word, of losing myself and surrendering myself in you, of being assimilated by your body, Jesus Christ. You, O Lord, are the irresistible and life-giving force, and because yours is the energy, because of the two of us, you are infinitely the stronger. It is on you that falls the part of consuming me in the union that should weld us together forever. Vouchsafe, therefore, something more precious still than the grace of a holy communion at death. It is not enough that I should die while communicating. Teach me to treat my death as an act of holy communion and union with you. Since the most important moment of our life is our last moment on earth, the moment of our death, it is tremendously important that we prepare for it as well as possible. We will probably not have a second chance, since rarely does one experience a clinical death and yet be revived. So it is recommended that at least one day a month we should prepare ourselves for our death by going through what I call a dress rehearsal for death. As you know, when a group is putting on a drama of some sort, a play, the night usually before it's open to the public, they have what they call a dress rehearsal, in which they put on the costumes that they're going to wear, and they go through the whole play exactly the way they are going to present it before an audience the following night. And so we need, in my recommendation, one day a month to practice a dress rehearsal for death. This dress rehearsal for death might be a day of prayer and retreat, a monthly day of recollection, at which time we stop and take stock of our life. to discern if we are headed in the right direction. And then we should try to live that whole day exactly as we would want to live it if we knew we would die by nightfall or during the night. This means that we will try to do all the things that we would want to do on earth before we die, or at least set some priorities of accomplishment before the inevitable moment of death takes place. One of the most wonderful benefits derived from a monthly dress rehearsal for death is a beautiful growth in detachment from the things of this earth. From the viewpoint of death and eternity, we are now able to rearrange the values of our life correctly. Things which seem so important from the viewpoint of this world no longer seem that valuable in the presence of the reality of one's death. Whereas other things, which we have a tendency to neglect and put off for future consideration, suddenly now take on a greater value. And thus, a day spent in preparation and consideration of our own death enables us to reorder our priorities so that henceforth we put first things first in our life and give the proper attention to such things as prayer, as charity towards others, compassion, forgiveness, mercy, justice, and so forth. And the experience of that day of dress rehearsal will then spread out over the rest of the month, so that each day we will find ourselves living the way we would want to live on the last day of our life. A day spent in the presence of death need not be morbid and sad, but rather one of anticipation of the joys of life with God in heaven. Our Christian faith teaches us that of the two aspects of life, life here on earth as compared with life after death and eternity, the life with God after death is infinitely more important than what we do on earth. For one reason, it will last forever, for all eternity, whereas life on earth is very limited. Our temporal life is indeed important. We must try to live that life and do whatever is needed to make it worthwhile. But the Bible insists that life with God after death is infinitely more important. As Paul says in 1 Corinthians, eye has not seen, ear has not heard, nor has it so much as dawned on us what God has prepared for those who love him. Or again in the 13th chapter of 1 Corinthians, Paul says, now I see indistinctly as in a mirror, then we shall see face to face. My knowledge is imperfect now, then I shall know even as I am known. Or again, Paul to the Philippians, for me, life means Christ. Hence, dying is so much gain. If, on the other hand, I am to go on living in the flesh, that means productive toil for me. I do not know which to prefer. I am strongly attracted by both. I long to die and to be freed from this life and to be with Christ, for that is the far better thing, Paul says. Yet, he says, it is more urgent that I remain alive for your sakes. To help us face old age, diminishment, and especially death with peace and joy, we need to reflect frequently on the promises of God found in the New Testament regarding the existence of everlasting life after death. Christians believe with St. Paul that if there is no resurrection of the dead, then Christ himself has not been raised. The 15th chapter of 1 Corinthians deals with this basic Christian belief concerning the continuation of life after physical death. As Christians, we believe that Jesus came to earth and chose to die on the cross so that we might be freed from eternal death. The preface for the Mass of Christian Death states, "For those who believe, life is not ended, but merely changed. When this body of our earthly dwelling lies in death, we gain an everlasting dwelling place in heaven." The secularistic worldview of many people today is either a total denial of a continuation of life after death, or a very serious doubt concerning such possibility. This agnosticism or disbelief in immortality has resulted in an almost total concentration of attention by people today upon the events of earthly life. Most people try to avoid the very thought of death as it involves their own life. Even the word death is evaded in polite conversation. With slumber parlors and artificial grass-covered mounds in the cemetery, even funerals are so rigged to hide the stark reality of death. And even when faced with the death of a loved one, people have developed a stance of looking upon death as out there, involving others perhaps, but somehow never considering it as involving oneself. As a result, such persons never really mature, since one of the authentic signs of mature adulthood is the willingness, the readiness, and the ability to face up to the reality of one's own inevitable death. Any other attitude does not agree with the actual facts of life. Once we believe strongly in the existence of eternal life after death, and sincerely try to do the best we can to lead a good life on earth, we will no longer be afraid of death. We will be able to reflect each day upon our own death and live each day as we would want to live the last day of our life upon earth. Among other things, preparation for death will be reflected in three basic attitudes. First of all, detachment from the things of this earth and attachment to the things of God and eternity. Secondly, a consistent effort to grow in unselfish love and loving service for others. And thirdly, a continuous and daily endeavor to grow in wholeness, maturity, and sanctity. As for detachment, if we look at life from the viewpoint of eternity, we realize that a lot of things which now concern us are not really important. Before making any decision, we might ask ourselves, how important will this be 100 years from now? How important is this from the aspect of life after death with God in eternity? We soon realize that a reordering of the priorities in our life is necessary. Things which seem very important may have to be relegated to some lower place on our scale of values, while things such as prayer, charity, faith, and hope will take on a much greater importance. Father Teilhard de Chardin, in his book Divine Milieu, points out that all of life should consist of a rhythm of attachment and detachment. He says, first of all, we must develop ourselves as fully as possible. We must take possession of the world and try to change the world and the people in the world and the things in the world, the institutions in the world, as much as is within our power. We must develop our potential for good. We must bring out into actual existence all of that vast potential of our unconscious. Develop these talents, this energy that is lying there fallow within our inner self and find a way of trying to make use of it to do as much good as we possibly can. But then this effort at development, at attachment to doing the very best we can with our life must constantly be developed in this rhythm of attachment and then detachment, of being willing to let go of everything, of being willing to turn our back on everything that we have tried so hard to develop in order to go on to something higher the moment that God calls us. How do we know when it is the right time to be attached and to develop, and when it is the right time to be detached and to be passive? This is where we have to depend in a special way upon our conscience, upon the voice of the Holy Spirit speaking to us through prayer. And this is also where a spiritual director can be of help. Not that the spiritual director is going to make all the decisions as to when is the right time to develop and when is the right time to be detached. But at least we can present to a spiritual director the decisions that we have arrived at in prayer as to whether this is a particular time for development or whether this is a particular time for diminishment. And by getting the objective approval or disapproval of our own intuitions, we are able with greater joy and with greater peace to accept particularly those moments of detachment. The second way that we prepare for death and for the diminishments of old age is in regards to love. Love seems to be the only thing that Christ our judge will be interested in when we die. According to Jesus, the two commandments of love, love of God and love of neighbor, contain the whole of God's law. How well we have used the opportunities to practice love for God and others each day in our life determines the success or failure of our life. And as Jesus points out so clearly in the 25th chapter of Matthew, that we will be judged primarily by whether we have been able to see Christ in our fellow human beings and have ministered to their needs. How unselfish, then, have we been in sharing our time, our money, our energy, our possessions with others? How much compassion and love and mercy and forgiveness have we shown to others? How well have we spent our time on earth in loving service for the needs of others? These will be the things that really concern God when he comes to judge our life. Therefore, we can prepare best for death by rising each morning with the purpose of finding the answer to the question, how can I spend this day doing the most possible good for the most people? How can I show my love for God by expressing my love and care for others today? As far as the resolution to struggle continuously and daily toward maturity and sanctity, we will do all we can to develop the vast potential that lies dormant below the level of our consciousness. We do this not only in order to be able to carry on our particular destiny here on earth, but this development of our potential is also a preparation for life after death. For we carry with us in death all of those spiritual elements of our personality. For example, our mind and our will, our ability to think and our ability to love, And it seems quite clear that we will continue after death to use these spiritual faculties and to make a contribution to what is called the communion of saints, to help people here on earth as well as help in any other place in the universe that needs help. And so the more highly we have developed our ability to think, the more highly we have developed our ability to love, the greater ability we will have to do good after death. Saint Therese of Lisieux, the little flower, made the statement shortly before she died that she would spend her heaven doing good on earth, letting fall a shower of roses, as she expressed it. The Carmelites in Chicago for many years have published each year an edition of the Shower of Roses, in which they have given examples of how Saint Therese has continued after her death to use those highly developed faculties of her mind and her will to pour out grace and help upon people here on earth. The same possibility awaits each one of us. So one of the very best ways to prepare ourselves for our life after death is to use every possible opportunity that we have here upon earth to grow in wisdom and to grow in love. It is interesting that Lawrence Moody, in his book Life After Life, as well as others who have written about these after-death experiences of people who have been pronounced clinically dead and then have been revived, that many of these persons speak of a figure of light, the risen Lord Jesus, that meets them after death and has two questions to ask of them. How have you grown in love, and how have you grown in wisdom? These seem to be the only two concerns that God has for us at the moment of death. And so, as we face up to old age and to the diminishments that lead up to death, we should make use of every possible opportunity to grow in wisdom and to grow in love. This is the end of the conference.